This podcast is produced by Student Media. Student Media is a student organization at the University of Evansville. Student Media produces the Crescent magazine, published online and in print 3 times a semester. Student Media produces several podcasts and utilizes design, photography, video, and sound towards experiential and academic learning in journalistic endeavors and engaging storytelling. Student Media elevates the voice of the student body and connects the campus and community to important information and points of view. To learn more, visit crescent.evansville.edu.
Hello, players who have the entire wardrobe of their D&D character.
And DMs who are so lost in the plot that they have no idea when the timeline started.
Welcome back to Table Talk. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Robert.
What are we talking about today, Robert?
Oh, Jesus. Several, I think technically like seasons ago, we talked about, I don't know when it happened. Again, this is a perfect example. We talked about Capes and Crux, specifically the campaign that we're playing right now. That's mine, dog.
Oh, I'm trying to... Sorry. Sorry. Continue. You were
Madison
loud as shit.
Doesn't usually mix the stuff, so
no,
she's learning how to do
that.
Now.
This is our agreement. You do editing and mixing, and I do everything else.
Not like everything else, just like a lot else.
Social media, graphics.
Yeah, just
trailers,
like a lot else.
Marketing.
Yeah.
Research.
Well, that's the job part of it.
Outreach.
And I have a job, so...
I want this to be my job, please.
I would love if it could
please
be.
Please listen. By the way, we have a Patreon. We never said anything about on the thing. We have a Patreon. We post a lot of behind-the-scenes
stuff. Season 2, Session 8.
We
have a Patreon.
Yeah, way late. But we post a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, information for DMs, players, custom character sheets, graphics, all that fun stuff. Please, please, please check it out. It's free. Eventually, we'll probably have like subscription tiers. But we're not there yet.
It's
so please check
free.
It out. We only have 2 members, and that's myself and then one of our friends.
Hell yeah.
So
it's the only way to do it, though, right?
A personal thank you message to whoever whoever joins, please.
Personal thank you message to literally anybody who wants to join.
I'll send you our address.
You will not. Respectfully, no, she will not. I will move. I refuse to have my...
Us.
I'm not putting my shit on the internet like that. Anyways, today we're talking about our current campaign, the Sapphire Prodigies. I've mentioned it a handful of times before. We did a brief episode about biggest fuck-ups we've ever seen happen at the table, and my number one is literally in this campaign. It is the reason why it has taken twice as long to reach the natural conclusion that should have been the end of Chapter 1. We were doing a little fancy cam thing the other day together, and somebody was giving a PowerPoint presentation on storytelling, and it was like, the traditional hero's journey, where it's like, you know, like they need a reason to go adventuring, and then they make friends, and then they get a mentor, and then about halfway through, there's what's called like a rebirth or a reset or something like that. It's basically like a dramatic change.
Rebirth. Something.
Yep. And then they go on and they finish the story about another halfway through, right? I realized the reason why it's taken us so fucking long to reach the natural conclusion of Chapter 1 is because we got about halfway through and then hard reset back basically to Step 2.
Yeah. And then I feel like we've done that again.
We've done it several times because a lot of our characters have gone through soft and hard reboots.
Oh, yeah.
People trying to figure out who their characters were. Anyways, today's basically talking about that campaign because eventually we're going to do a one-shot in a couple of sessions after this one set in that world. So just to kind of give you all a little bit of background, also just to kind of talk about our campaign currently, which we've done a couple of different times, but in a more formal way.
The characters that you might see.
And the characters you might see, and also trying to figure out a timeline because having it be cut in the middle and then reset back to not a super specific point means that mapping this motherfucker out is impossible.
It has the amount of set, which this is not for people who don't play D&D who listen to our podcast. This is not a common thing to do. I don't think.
No, I don't think a lot of people reset their whole campaigns.
Yeah, I think that we as people and as players got ourselves to a point where we were like, this is not the world that we wanted to play in. This is not the world we want. Like, we gotta take a lap. And we did. But it has led to a lot of fun moments.
Yeah, we did.
We're like, after a session being like, wait, I just realized that like something that happened, like that we completely forgot about, that completely makes everything that just happened today irrelevant. Like,
yep.
Oops, I accidentally, I already
did
told that.
That
character,
yep.
That this person was doing this thing, and the whole session was about someone discovering that that person was doing that thing or something like that. So this is really a puzzle episode more than it is a recap, because this is
yep.
us figuring out in real time. That is what Robert is doing on his laptop. That is why I
have
my laptop
down.
Up to kind of gauge and map what the fuck the timeline is. My vote was just to try and go through the timeline and then talk about the reset at the end. But now we're dragging all of you through the same confusion.
We're at breakneck speed, by the way, because we don't have that much time.
No. So do you want to start since you're like you DM'd
yeah,
this?
Yeah, I'll do a little bit of a world intro and kind of the setup for session one, because technically we had a session zero, and then I didn't really like the way I did it. Everyone else did, though, and then we had a session one. So
yeah.
Go back and listen to a previous episode specifically about Capes and Crooks, and that'll give you a little bit of world intro.
Please.
Please go back and listen. The world is kind of cyberpunky inspired. I wanted to play in a more modern setting, but something that was a little bit ahead of modern. Like, I didn't want to just play like in 2024. It's shit's boring. So I did superhero setting using the Capes and Crooks example timeline that they provide in their TTRPG 5th edition source book. Sort of overarching themes and idea and world setup. So in 2099, which is the time I have it set at, I'm pretty sure in the source book it's a little bit before that. Superheroes exist, superpowered beings exist. They're called deviants because there is a deviation somewhere within their genes that it allows them to do superhuman things. But it extends past people. Plants and animals alike have also been affected by the shift that happens right around like around the 2030s. And then all of a sudden everything goes to shit. World governments collapsed. Countries don't know what the fuck to do because now they have to handle their own superhero being or superpowered beings that don't know how to handle themselves. After many, many years of turmoil and the world being absolute chaos, eventually with the sort of bankroll of a company called Vayne, which is like the ultimate capitalist company, comes in and partners with what's left of the world governments and says, what if we made cities that were designed specifically for deviants and non-deviants to live together so that we stop like killing each other in the wastes? So that's what
it's
they do.
Basically Mad Max outside of the city
yeah,
limits.
More or less. We haven't really explored a whole lot of what's out there yet either. So, I mean, we'll get there eventually, I'm sure. But
sure.
We're very much focused on what's inside the cities that are called gem cities. There are probably anywhere from 30 to 40 of them around the world. Each of them, again, is kind of run by Vayne and / the remainder of the world governments that are sort of operating as one. And basically the promise of the gem cities is that as long as you act right and you abide by the law, regardless of whether or not you have a deviation or not, get to live here and kind of work together in harmony. There's no discrimination. There's no poverty. There's no homelessness, which very quickly turns out to be bullshit, or at least the version of the world that I played in, because that doesn't exist. So then this campaign in particular takes place in one of those gem cities called Sapphire City, which is one of the first cities to allow deviants to go beyond vigilanteism and actually take on the sort of hero status. So being professional, being registered in a sense, being given like legal precedent to do things that vigilantes would do, like bring in villains or like bring in thugs or stop crime. Or assist the city using their deviations behind a mask without having to publicly identify themselves. Up until this point in the story, like even before we get to day one, there are a handful of pre-established heroes. I mean, there are quite a few, but just kind of a broad overview. There are a handful of organizations like DARK, which is sort of like a underground spy network that exist within Sapphire City. Their whole thing is basically being sort of in the shadows and then trading information. There are the Codfathers gang. I forget. I think they're called the Guppies or some shit. I'm pretty sure that's what they're called. I think that's what they're called. And anyways, those guys are basically all of the animal deviants sort of working together in sort of a shady underground situation under Codfather's rule, who's a half man, half shark with like water manipulation. He's also just fucking huge and kind of provides this like safe haven for those that are animal powered, who kind of receive more discrimination than others because they look different. Again, there's no utopia. It doesn't exist. But they certainly try to
You're
get close to one.
Such a cheery person.
Super, super. Trying to think of other, like, criminal... Oh, there's a spy circle. So spy circle is kind of like the what is it, the Doom Squad?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, kind of like Doom Squad, where it's, I mean, they're not...
They're the bad guys.
They're not as nefarious as the Doom Squad is, where it's like, oh, we're trying to take over the world. I mean, it's literally just a city.
I mean, it's still like fucked up crime. It's
well, Codfather's gang is the more cartoonishly evil group because it's like, they're gangsters and they use Tommy guns and they like transport goods in and out of the city
they
illegally.
They beat the shit out of
people. They run like protection rackets and they're just like traditional mobsters that just so happen to look like animals. The spy circle is much more professional about the whole thing. Their form of crime is sort of like high-end businesses, so running casinos, taking over businesses, running a lot of fronts, sort of sabotaging the government and politics and getting involved in DRT. So I haven't even talked about DRT yet. It's a great segue. So then one of our other non-villain factions is the Deviant Response Team, although they get pretty fucking close. So, because there's a world government set up, but there's no, like, formal government in every city, was something that Vayne / the world government has implemented in every gem city is something called the Deviant Response Team. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's basically just SWAT, FBI, Special Forces, blah, 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 but their only sort of goal and job is managing deviants, whether that is developing new technologies for them to safely exist within the city, if someone's powers or deviations are sort of too volatile for them to handle. Also, they're the ones that come in and, like, arrest deviants, and their technology and the weapons that they use are sort of designed to neutralize any deviation across the spectrum. Their, like, full-time job around the clock, 24 hours a day, is literally developing new technologies for each sort of new kind of deviant that exists within the city. Below them, there is the Sapphire City Police Department, run by Commissioner Slane, who's basically just Jim Gordon, but a woman. And they're kind of the shitty end of the stick. So if you have DRT who shows up in like 30 minutes to an hour when they're called, you have the SCPD, and they have to be there immediately, but what the fuck is a guy with a gun going to do against somebody who can literally fire lightning bolts out of their hands?
Yeah,
it's kind of comical that the two exist within the same city, but it does, according to the source book, and I thought that's kind of a funny contradiction to have, right? You have, like, the cops who are, in today's society, seen as the corrupt ones, and yet, like, the step above them, DRT, are the ones that are often seen and sort of thought of as, like, these really shitty people. So the cops aren't awful in this one. They're just trying to survive like everybody else, like everyone else does. So they're kind of there for the more small stuff, breaking up gangs and that kind of fun stuff. But again, what's a guy with a gun going to do against somebody who has bulletproof skin?
Yeah. Or a giant shark.
Yeah. Nothing. So that's sort of where the natural rise then for heroes comes, right? Because DRT isn't really trusted. Also, because their equipment is so specialized and because they operate out of the heart of the city, it takes them fucking forever to get anything done.
Well, it would be like calling the FBI anytime that there was like a crime.
Yeah,
it's
basically.
Like, that is
like it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, it's just they have one central location as opposed to like police officers who are
yeah, where they have like departments and stations. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then that's kind of where the natural rise for superheroes comes in because I mean, right? We have people that are obviously going to use their deviations to either get a one up in life or commit crimes. Rob places, take things they shouldn't, you know, why people do crime. So then you have the opposite of them, people that are interested in using their deviations to stop those people and sort of further that ideal, that mission of like living in a utopia or living in harmony with one another. And because the cops can't do anything about that and DRT is too few for the many people that live in their cities, we allow superheroes to call themselves superheroes. And that's kind of where like the setting for the campaign really comes in. The positive factions outside of the police, we have the Everyman Brigade, which is basically like, oh my God, what's that service online where you can hire people for just random jobs?
TaskRabbit?
Yeah, TaskRabbit, shit like that. But for heroes. So it's, you know, if some billionaire needs a team to, I don't know, go fetch a fucking artifact from gang number 1, 2, and 3, then he can just, instead of having to go and find one through adventuring, he can just pay somebody.
Yeah.
He can go to the Everyman Brigade, say, hey, I need a team of 5. This is the kind of mission. This is the, like, the level of difficulty or the amount of risk. And then you can hire heroes. And also just gives heroes the chance to actually get paid for what they do. So that's kind of the other positive.
I can't wait to get more into that.
Positive side to like the Everyman Brigade. Beyond them, there aren't really a lot of other hero factions. There are. There's the Furnace, which is run by the second most powerful hero in the city called Inferno. It's basically like a full-time training complex and like hero mill, if you will. Very exclusive, very hard to get into. Turns out a lot of really powerful heroes that all kind of work within this network. And then aside from them, you have the only successful hero team that has existed within Sapphire City in the last 60, 70 years, the Millennial Group. Don't ask me why they're called that. I stole that name from a book that I read forever ago. Yeah, couldn't tell you. They are old, so it is kind of funny because, you know, Millennial Group. But yeah, beyond that, I think it was just kind of like turn of the century thing. So they, it's a team of 5. It's basically just the traditional, like, Avengers. You have, like, a Captain America knockoff, Rebellion. You have a Vision kind of character named Processor. Holy shit, I'm forgetting the people on the team. There are a few unique ones. There's Fistful.
There's a kind of a Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch
type character named Black Magic.
Named Black Magic, who uses, like, magic. There's Fistful, who's basically just the Hulk, but if he was white, spray tanned,
like
from Jersey, had blonde hair, and basically did superpower steroids. And then you have Monk, who is like a...
Or Diva as well.
Yep. And you have Monk, who's basically just like a monk, who has who has incredibly strong telepathy and doesn't speak to people. And then Diva, who has like supersonic voice powers. And that's kind of like her whole thing. So not a huge setup for the world, honestly. I mean, you have all these factions. There's a lot of heroes. There's also the number one hero in the city, which I would be yelled at if I didn't mention, because it's incredibly integral to somebody's backstory, named Surge. She's like light Superman. She's not quite as invincible, but in this setting she basically is. So some more background about the powers and the way that they exist in this universe. You're called what's, or there's a name for people that have more than one set of powers, and they're called a gene hazard. And the reason for that is it's already incredibly difficult for someone's body to balance one deviation. When you start introducing more deviations, like the rate of that person making it past birth is incredibly low. If they do, then you have a significantly more dangerous person, but also just infinitely more potential. And Surge is one of the only, pretty much the only successful gene hazard person with 2 sets of powers to exist within Sapphire City. She has basically gravity manipulation, and then also incredibly strong energy projection. So there's not much she can't do. She's very solo in the sense that she doesn't interact with a lot of people. She doesn't really do a lot of social media. She's very just kind of like, I'm here to protect the city because that's what my powers allow me to do. She's very stoic. She's not nearly as friendly as some of her like other hero counterparts are, but that's kind of because the job doesn't really require that. So a slightly different take on Superman. It's more like if Superman had Batman's like...
Stoicism
and outlook on people, but still had to be Superman.
Yeah.
With all of the power and responsibility that comes with that. It's like, no, I don't want to talk to any of you. I don't want to have to take care of you, but I
like,
have
not broody.
Yeah,
like,
but not broody. But I have the power set, and I like helping people, so I'm here and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Also, I know that none of you are better than me, so like, let's calm the fuck down.
Correct.
Quit trying to step to me 24/7. I don't have no idea who the number three hero is in the city. If you ask me, couldn't tell you. Probably Rebellion, but
gross.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. So
not a blonde man.
That's the very long-winded setup for the universe. We pick up. I guess we'll just start with session one, right? We pick up with four people.
We introduce one later.
We introduce a fifth person several more sessions in.
I'm just the fact checker here.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's my role this episode is being like, actually, no.
Yeah, we're gonna try and speed run to the to the Flashpoint episode, where everything gets reset. But it starts with our four main heroes, I guess I should say, all conveniently meeting in Codfather's main warehouse, where a Spider-Man-esque hero called Static, who operates in the Eastern Fringes, which is basically like the Bronx, is being held captive. And then an NPC gets introduced in this first episode named Jury, who is basically just a frat boy asshole who has, like, B-lister status because he has a lot of money and he can pay for his social media. And he's very conventionally attractive. He has very conventional powers. He can fly. He has super strength. And he can see through the eyes of other people. So as opposed to somebody who has, like, a tentacle for an arm, he is significantly safer to go with as, like, an example hero, like a poster child. And he has the money to back it. So he basically joins Nightlight, who's one of our other heroes that Madison plays, right in the beginning, very conveniently.
Yes.
I don't know how much of every episode we want to recap, because I feel like we're going to get bogged down.
Say, I can do really quick. I could just gloss over who the heroes are. And like.
Sure. Yeah, if you want to do that.
So I guess starting with my character, because we just mentioned her. I've already talked about her in the first Capes and Crooks one, so this will be really fast. Her name is Nightlight. She's 21 years old. She's a college student. She's a huge comic book super fan. Surge is her absolute idol.
Mm.
And when she was younger, she got powers in a freak accident from another one of the heroes in the world. That hero was not aware that she has powers. But she decides, okay, I'm going to become like my comic books. And the way she's able to use her powers is she's able to copy the things that she reads about in her comic books and copy people's power sets.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like trying to make a name for herself. She's like very cartoonishly like sitting on a rooftop just being like, crime, I'm looking for you. And that's where Jury shows up and she's like, yeah, I tracked down Static. We can go there now. And he's like, great. So that's why they head there. And then there's another character named Kaze, who 18 years old. He's also Daisy's also from the Eastern Fringes, kind of. She's but for intents and purposes from the Eastern Fringes, which is the poorer part of town, which is where most of our story takes place.
Yep.
He is a mechanic at his family's garage. He has wind powers. He's not a superhero. He doesn't have a superhero identity at this point. He's Dick Grayson.
He's a guy. He's a guy like that Dick looks Grayson. A hell of a lot like Dick Grayson.
And he has a younger sister who's Annie powered. So he's kind of tapped into that world. We know that he doesn't live with his parents. He lives with his aunt and his sister there. Then someone drops off a car to him. If you want to.
Oh, yeah.
Is it like that one NPC actually interacted with literally every single person?
Yeah, so that one NPC, Jury, actually ends up interacting with Sebastian earlier that day, unbeknownst to Sebastian and to Jury, that they would literally meet less than 24 hours later. He drops off a car to Sebastian's family's mechanic to get it worked on. It is a very expensive car. It is very out of place for him to have brought this to one of the shittiest parts of town, right? Like, you're not taking a several hundred thousand, they're called credits in this universe, credit car to literally the place where cars get jacked in broad daylight.
Correct.
And yet he does.
And he looks in the back seat of the car.
Yep.
And he finds a somebody's ID and a gun and blood. And he's like, cool, this is bad. We gotta get rid of this. So he calls his friend Ricky, who's questionable. But Ricky gets shit done, so he's like,
Ricky gets shit done.
I know who we can sell this to get it off our hands, because literally the only person in town who will buy this car, who can afford this car, is going to be this guy, Codfather. So let's go to Codfather's. So they head off there.
Super convenient setup.
And then, I don't know what the fuck Shadow was doing to be
Shadow was, I think, oh, Jesus Christ. So then we have another character called the Shadow... Jesus Christ. Sorry, his character is just a lot to think of. He's gone through some of the more drastic changes out of all of our other characters, but he is kind of like, if Batman had powers, like actual powers, he manipulates the dark and like darkness, and hence the name Shadows. He can kind of turn shadows and darkness into physical objects and use them as such. He can kind of swing around a little bit like Spider-Man. It's not quite that fluid. Use them as weapons. He also has a very strong, like, I think his class is literally psychic, so on top of using shadows to sort of be a little bit more stealthy and move around in the dark and create very quick, sharp, agile weapons, he uses his psychic abilities to essentially terrorize the people that he's fighting. He's just like a straight-up terrorist to a lot of people. Kind of crazy. He's also a full-time doctor, so I think when he's introduced, if I remember correctly, he was tracking down Static, who Shadow has worked with many times. Like, they're basically, Static is Shadow's only real friend, and that's because Static is the only person that understands that, like, Shadow doesn't, his intention isn't to inflict harm, but that's the only way he knows how to do the job, so that's what he does. Mm-hmm. And he tracks down a lead last minute to essentially rescue his friend, and ends up heading to Godfather's warehouse on the exact same night that everybody else does.
So we meet at Godfather's warehouse. There's some, like, fun little moments there that I won't get into much detail of, like, Jury and Nightlight breaking in the most convoluted way possible.
Yep.
The password to get in was the word fish. And then also, like, 1,000 credits on somebody's card.
Yep.
And so they're all kind of going in completely different directions. And then we meet inside. There's this another character called Chip, who was a this bot called an Atlas bot, which were designed by DRT basically to be able to stop deviants. If you... yeah, you could figure out what that means.
Yep. They're like, he's basically one of the Sentinels from the X-Men line of comics, if you know what those are. That's kind of the touchstone for his character. So at the time when everybody meets him, and even when he's introduced, nobody knows what he is. Androids exist in this world, contrary to what he himself may believe. They do exist. So this is a world, right, where you have talking dogs, you have flying cactus plants, you have lightning-wielding people. It is so not out of the realm of possibility that robots are walking around as autonomous human beings.
Mm-hmm.
But Chip is a little bit unique in the sense that his sort of backstory up until this point, which is sort of revealed later, is that he was basically, he was in a shipping container from DRT to be disposed outside of the city. Codfather's guys basically jack the container, take all the technology they find inside of it, because DRT's got nice stuff, and just so happened to find a little robot sitting in the back of the shipping container.
It's basically, you know, in Star Wars where C-3PO was working for Jabba the Hutt for that period of time?
Yeah.
It was that.
Yeah.
It, like, fully,
they,
that's what it was.
Somehow managed to turn on this incredibly advanced piece of technology. It does not immediately go into deviant killing mode, or they all would have died. Instead, it's basically just like a child. It's just like a baby that got turned on that's ready to take orders because they just tinkered with it enough until it fucked up and turned on.
Yeah.
It was never even designed to be turned on. So over the next handful of months, he's basically just like the personal butler for Codfather. And because he literally does anything you tell him to do, because that's the only software he has running... Codfather never tells him to, like, keep anything to himself because he never leaves the warehouse. He doesn't really interact with people. He's raised by gangsters. He's just kind of a guy.
Yeah.
He's just, like, a little bot. If anyone's seen the movie Chappie, that's also kind of a touchstone for his character as well. But
it's very Baymax. It's like...
Yep.
It's...
Shit goes awry very quickly for Jury and for Nightlight. They get in. Jury starts shit. Somebody says Jury's government last name out loud.
Because the car was being returned.
Because the car was being sold there, and somebody basically ran the VIN number, and they go, cool, it's registered to somebody with the last name Umbra, which is also the last name of the mayor of Sapphire City.
Yeah.
So then Confather loses his shit and is basically like, cool, so not only did you bring me a really expensive car that's going to be hard for me to get rid of, but you brought me the car, potentially, of the mayor, like, to my warehouse.
Yeah, Jury hears that shit, goes, it's time to bail. Yeah. And Nightlight like, goes, well, why? But no, we've got to, like, do the superhero thing. That's the whole reason we came.
So then everyone fights. Chip doesn't really know what side to take because his orders are basically just to keep things safe. His whole interaction through that entire combat encounter was so weird. Because if one of the heroes said, hey, please don't hurt me, he wouldn't. But if Confather said, hey, don't let that car get away, he's going to shoot a fucking rocket at it.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was funny. It was a great intro episode. But
it was very fun. So
that gives you an idea of how that goes.
The fight happens. It goes great. They find Static. They rescue Static. I say rescue. He's in a coma. But they get him. And then Shadow calls his fucking car over and is like, no one has interacted with each other in this fight, by the way. We've all been
in separate fighting.
Rooms. Yeah. Nightlight and Jury and Chip interacted, but that was about it.
Shadow and Sebastian, who is not called Kaze at the time, interact a little bit, and that Shadow steps in to try and save him and his friend Ricky's life. I think it was a decision that Shadow deeply regrets because shortly thereafter, Ricky picks up a gun and starts shooting people because Ricky, unlike everybody else who is a player character, gives zero fuck about the preservation of life. He's basically just like a very low-level gangster who is just here to make like a car deal, and I'll be damned if he's going to die in a fucking warehouse.
Yeah, Ricky's like, this is my last stand.
And there's a moment where Kaze's literally about to get shot and potentially go down to zero HP, and Ricky pulls out a fucking gun and puts it to the guy's temple and pulls the trigger. Sebastian, slack-jawed, is like, what the fuck is happening? Ricky then pulls him into the room, shoves packets of drugs and guns in a duffel bag, and is like, cool, we're shooting our way out.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Crazy-ass combat encounter.
So fun little combat. They all happen to be, like, outside at the same time, and Nightlight is dragging Static's body, basically. Shadow pulls up and is like, I'm a doctor. We need to get this man to the hospital. Get in my car.
Yep.
And for some reason,
everyone listens.
We listened, and we all got in the car, and we all go to the hospital. We're at the hospital. This is where things get fucky.
Jury doesn't go with, by the way.
Yes,
Jury saves a civilian who also happens to be Sebastian's sister, who stowed away in the trunk of the car because she thought the car was cool. Saves her and is like, cool, I'm done. This is so much more than I bargained for. You all have fun. See you never.
Yeah.
So that's why he doesn't go with them.
He also, at this point, if you can't tell, this is an NPC that basically became a player character because of some life reasons.
I have a box.
So that's my box. Part of the reason he wasn't there is that it didn't matter at the time. So they all go to the hospital. Everyone's getting treated for their wounds. Some people are a little bit more experienced with being shot than others. And during this, Shadow fully reveals to the group, my alter ego is Damien, I'm a doctor, I'm taking over this operation, fronts the hospital bill for Sebastian and Daisy, who are both broke and live in the Eastern Fringes,
yep,
and do not have a dollar to their name, and he goes, no, I got you, I'm a rich doctor. And then, as the cops come in and start asking questions, and Nightlight has a panic attack and tells the cops everything, because, yeah, that's what you do, then she talks to Chip and is like, can you give me any more information on Codfather? And he decides to, in a wild move, put every single piece of information that he's gathered since he's been turned on,
yep,
public on the internet, like on Twitter.
Yeah, so one of the cops that shows up to talk to the heroes that were brought into the hospital, because that's kind of her fucking job, is Commissioner Slane, the head of the SCPD. She comes in and is like, because before this, DRT guys are in there questioning, and Shadow's like, don't say a fucking word. Nightlight's about to crack. Slane comes in and goes, cool, how about you fuckheads get out of the room? And they leave because Slane's a very intimidating person. She bounces from person to person, doesn't get a whole lot of information, and then finds Chip and goes, "Hey, Chip, what can you tell me about Godfather?" And he goes, "Do you have a computer nearby?" And, you know, this is a world full of technology. So Slane goes, "Yeah, sure, we'll hook you up to a laptop if that's what you need. Just, you know, drop the files in like a folder." Well, our player thought it would be absolutely fucking, fucking hilarious if Chip didn't understand the difference between just putting the information on a computer and then making it public knowledge.
Like setting up a Twitter account to post it.
Yep. So in literally the blink of an eye, he basically plugs himself into a computer, makes a Twitter account, posts everything, and I mean everything that he has on Godfather. Names, addresses, shipments, weapons, fucking car VIN numbers, you name it. It's out there. Why? Because Godfather never thought he was going to lose the fucking robot.
Yeah.
Why would he? The thing basically does what it's told.
Yeah. So as soon as that goes public, there's a fun little phone call over at DRT headquarters, and we meet a character named Oliver, who is one of the head scientists for DRT. And his boss, this guy named Henry, is like, "Hey, man, remember that robot that went that went missing that we were trying to get rid of?" And he goes, "Yeah, I remember that." He goes, "Well, it just turned on. How the fuck did it turn on? Also, it's loose. And it just doxed Godfather. Maybe you get off your ass and go get it. Yeah. I'll give you a literal army.
If you can go retrieve.
Tank. Go get the fucking robot."
Experiment, yeah.
So Oliver, who's another one of the player characters, who we later find out is a hero named Volt with lightning powers.
Like a C-lister.
Heads off to the hospital. There's a brief moment in the hospital where it's like at the DRT has taken Static into their custody and he's like being treated. And everyone's like, "Great, yeah, that's what we came to do," except for one character named Shadow. And he goes, "Hey, kids, you stay in this room," because at this point it's just Nightlight and Sebastian. He goes, "Stay in this room. I'm going to go crawl through the vents because I don't trust DRT. And they're like, "Okay, strange grown-ass man that we don't know." And he does that. And then he decides that the best course of action is to kidnap Static and break him out of the hospital at the same time that DRT is rolling up to try and retrieve Chip. At some point, briefly, Jury shows up to talk to Nightlight and is like, "Hey, don't talk to the cops. And also, maybe, don't hang out with these people." Just putting that out
Jury
there.
Jury flies in and is like, "Hey, dog.
Bad vibes from everyone here. You're better than that.
I respect what you're doing. You're kind of bad at it, but, like, maybe you could be good. Word of professional, friendly advice. Drop them as soon as humanly possible. Never interact with them ever again. And, like, maybe you could be somebody." That's not what happens. DRT shows up with Oliver / Volt undercover because Oliver's sort of part of his whole personality is that he's an incredibly intelligent person who essentially is trying to work through the system. So he works DRT during the day and is Volt sort of during the evening. And he's also the head of the experimental technologies department, so he actually has quite a bit of leeway. Turns out that would be my fucking downfall. I was giving my players a little bit too much power before they were ready for it. But he can kind of do whatever he wants to because he's the head of one of their most, like, sacred departments. I mean, 75% of what DRT does is make experimental technology, and he's literally the executive director of that.
He's also crazy.
Yeah, he's also batshit. That's just part of his personality that
which
none of us
we
were
didn't
expecting.
Know until much later.
Yeah, so he shows up with an army, a
don't
tank.
Don't pull that off.
He shows up with an army.
Stop that.
A tank.
I spent time
I'm pushing it back.
Okay.
He shows up with a bunch of shit. Basically, everything that DRT has available, locks down the entire hospital, sets up snipers, walks in, and is like, "Cool. Everybody that's in this building, point us in the direction of the robot that's been walking around." He gets looped several times. Chip hides basically on command. Shadow disappears into the vents, like Madison mentioned, and goes to rescue Static, who's also being held by DRT for some reason. Nobody knows why they're doing that. They don't know why they did that today, actually. Because we haven't had the time to get to that piece of information. But anyways, all of that happens. Chip knocks out Volt in the first interaction. We find out that Volt / Oliver is actually Chip's creator. He literally is he pioneered their experimental sort of Atlas bot program and intentionally fucked him up so that way he could never be turned on. And then he was. So it was both a shock that his boss was yelling at him to go get a million chip a million credit piece of technology, and also a shock because his Frankenstein's monster that was basically built with zero on switch
turned on
and was in a hospital full of innocent civilians.
It
doesn't go well. None of it goes well.
So long story short, the rest of the team grabs Chip. They bail out of the hospital in a stolen ambulance because cars fly. They fly the fuck out.
Oh, yeah. All the cars in this universe, by the way, are like propulsion propelled. It's like anti-gravity stuff.
So there's like a little bit of a combat. Not they crazy. Get the fuck out. Everyone's like, where do we go? What do we do? We're criminals now? Are we criminals now? Why are we doing this? And then Sebastian goes, I got a friend's place we can crash at. It's totally off the grid. So they go to Ricky's place. Ricky pulls a gun on all of them immediately.
Pause. I can't believe you forgot who showed up in the middle of all that. As you all were literally flying away in the vehicle.
Oh, yeah. I was just doing a quick gloss over version.
I thought that was
important.
Anyway, Surge shows up in the middle of this after she has a stern talking to Volt on the ground and basically goes, hey, dog, I need you to do your job because right now you're looking mad fucking incompetent and this is kind of embarrassing for all of us. So what does Oliver do? Makes a bunch of shitty-ass smart-aleck remarks and then goes, fuck you, I'll do what I want. And Surge goes, okay, we can... That's fine. We can keep that energy. And then flips all his vehicles and then leaves. In the process of them leaving, she stops all of them, Oliver included, and is basically tells Oliver, hey, you need to find them and you need to keep them safe. Some shit's going down. I can't tell you what it is. Please do your job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know who you are. Please do your job. Flies away. Also stops the car as it's like mid-flight across the city and goes, hey, guys, what are we doing?
The reason I didn't mention it because it was only to fucking Sebastian.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't
where
know.
He then established that we had crank windows. Well, I'm like, cool. Your car suddenly stops moving midair and doesn't begin to fall or go forward or backwards or anything because she has fucking gravity powers. She basically sits on top of the car, sits in the front of the car and is like, hey, can you roll down the window so we can talk for a second? And he goes, yeah, I crank down the window. Excuse me? You do what?
It's a flying car. It has crank windows.
Every car is basically...
It's not only that. It's an ambulance.
It's basically a
this
mini
is an
jet.
Ambulance.
Oh, yeah. They also steal a fucking jet. Or not a jet. Sorry, an ambulance. They fight on
this,
the...
No, the ambulance is what has crank windows.
Yeah. It all has crank windows. So now, canonically, every vehicle we have in this universe has crank windows.
Yeah. So they go to Ricky's. Sebastian's like, y'all could stay the night here. Nightlights kind of goes like, respectfully, I'm going to go back to my place. But everyone else kind of stays the night. And as the only reason I mentioned that Nightlight goes off is she goes to meet up with her very best friend, Parker, who absolutely hates heroes and has no idea that she is one, at their favorite comic book shop. And as she's picking up her new issues, she's like, oh, look, I made a little appearance in the Jury comic. And she's like buying all of her other ones to stay up to date. And she finds a comic book that looks like it was homemade, and it has her on the cover, and it's like titled Nightlight, and it's her first comic book, and she's so excited, and she takes that, and she buys it, and she cannot wait to show all of her new friends tomorrow. And so the next day, they've all decided that they're going to meet at Sebastian's family's garage. They all go there, everyone else shows up like in full costume except for Sebastian, who is not a superhero at this point. Nightlight shows up in like a fucking hoodie and sunglasses and a hat as to not like the very Captain America like incognito fit. On the way there, Shadow is also walking down the street, and then Oliver rolls up unprompted. Oliver and Nightlight had a brief interaction in the hospital in which he came in, locked the door behind him, and said some cryptic ass shit.
Yep.
And she wasn't about that energy, and he starts getting weird, and she clocks this, she pulls out a pepper spray and sprays it at him. It's like that Spider-Man meme, but it's like two like men in their 30s and then like a fucking college girl in a sweatshirt with pepper spray, and his solution was to step up and push her finger down on the pepper spray and pepper spray himself in the eyes. And that should have been a red flag for all of us at the table, but it wasn't.
No, I think it was. You can't do much about that.
It still didn't click that he was that level of crazy.
I didn't know he was going to be that level of crazy either, if it tells you just how, oh my God, I'm going to hurt myself.
You work on that.
Yeah.
So they go into the garage.
1 second.
They meet in the back. They start kind of like updating and touching base on everything. Oliver's in tow. He everyone's like, hey, man, what the fuck are you doing here? It's another tense moment. Nightlight at this point pulls out her Glock because she stays strapped. And everyone's like, why the fuck do you have a gun? And then he puts it in his mouth. Like, he steps forward and kind of gives the gun a blowjob. And that was another moment where it should have clicked for some of us at the table. Oh, he's crazy. And it didn't. So there's that fun little interaction. Oliver reveals to all of them, nah, I'm actually a double agent. I'm Volt, the superhero. You all are in some shit. I'm trying to help the team. I'm trying to help y'all. Can I
also, that robot in the corner is mine.
Yeah.
And is incredibly dangerous. Please step away from the robot. And the robot goes, like, if I remember correctly, I knocked you the fuck out. I'm not going anywhere.
And everyone's like, no, this robot's our new friend. Actually, we're not going to give him up. So, tense standoff. Then, Inferno, you know, the second hero that Robert mentioned before, walks into the garage and says, hey, Sebastian, can I talk to you? And he goes, yeah. And we go, what's up? Why is he here? And he goes, oh, that's my dad. Just
doesn't like attempt to withhold information. He goes, yeah, that's my father.
Off bat, they have a conversation. He's like, I'm glad you're like going to become a hero now. He's like,
Sebastian's like, nah, dog, not really.
Toxic dad of all time. I don't live with you
definitely.
For a reason.
He's up there with shitty dads in the universe. We have two that are competing right now for the number one shitty spot.
You have to introduce a good dad.
Yeah, I will eventually. I don't think there are many people. I mean, we haven't talked about Volt's dad at all, so I guess there's an opportunity to do it there.
Yeah. I don't have a dad.
I haven't introduced a single mom yet. They're all dead.
I don't have either.
Sebastian's is dead. Shadow's is dead. I think they're all dead. Part of Volt's backstory is that his mother dies when he gets his powers.
Yeah, I was fucked up.
Everyone's mom is dead. Maybe I'll kill a dad next time.
I mean, I have my moms, but they live in a different city.
Yeah, not like your biological mother, though.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Everyone else is like immediate family members are all fucking dead.
Nah, she's a foster baby.
It just kind of tells you what kind of backstories our players like to make.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that happens. As they're still kind of having this tense conversation, an envelope shows up addressed to Nightlight, and she opens it, and oh my gosh, it's another comic book, but why does someone know that I'm here? Okay, guess it's time to read through this comic book. Oh, and, like, the first comic book, like, followed her, and she's like, that's kind of weird, because, like, how did somebody know? But, like, everything that I did is in public, so, like, I guess it could have been someone who saw. Or it also could have been, like, maybe, like, Jury did this because she was in, like, the back of his last comic, and he's very tuned into, like, he has, like, an invisible assistant that follows him and, like, gets the information and everything. So she didn't think much of it. Now, this second one has her, like, apartment. It has her alter ego. It has her best friend. It has, like, all of her personal information. It was basically,
everything,
like,
she's done over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, like,
to simplify.
To a T and to her opening up this comic. And she's like, oh, I'm not about that, actually. And then she flips the page and sees this drawing of a woman in a black superhero costume, or, like, I guess not hero costume, in a costume with, like, a red stripe down, and she's, and like, holding hands with her. And she's like, this isn't, like, fun anymore. And she kind of shows it to the gang. She's like, hey, guys, I think I might have a stalker. This started off as fun, and now this doesn't seem fun anymore. And everyone's like, that's concerning. And then she gets a phone call.
She wanted to be famous.
Not in this way.
She wanted to be famous.
Then she gets a phone call from Officer Slane saying, hey.
Commissioner.
My bad. Commissioner Slane.
Different title.
My bad. I made a mistake.
Correct.
Forgive me.
There's two now.
Okay. Shoot me. What happens with the third one?
Continue.
She hands out, by the way, business cards to, like, everyone she meets because she's, like, trying to network as a hero. And she was like, you gave me your business card. You seemed like a good kid. There's this case at this guy named Rexford Chiller's place. He needs help finding this, like, artifact that went missing. If you want to go ahead and, like, take that case and, like, you can bring people or a team or whatever. And Nightlight is like, this is my fucking moment. And tells everyone there, she's like, all of you are coming with me. We're going to Rexford Chiller's. We're going to solve this case. We're going to be a team. Let's be a team, because I get to put together a team for this. It'll be exciting and fun.
To be a little bit more evenly spread, because Madison is very much Nightlight. Other things are happening to other characters at the same time, believe it or not. Shadow is also trying to riz up Sebastian's aunt at this point and is basically living full-time with them. He very quickly moves in. He goes, hey, Aunt Susie, here's a fat stack of credits. What if I just lived here?
Like 100,000.
Temporarily. Because I don't really want to go home right now.
Which
I feel
was
like
for
maybe
no
I
reason.
Should like protect the youngsters. Also, I'm a terrible person, but you don't know that because I'm a doctor.
And she goes,
that happens.
You are welcome. Anytime.
Yep. Sebastian is very much...
He buys a van off somebody from the street.
Yeah. Sebastian is trying to run away from being a superhero at breakneck speed. He's like, guys, I didn't want to be there in the first place. I have so many other... Now you're living with me. Now my house, my home, my family business is your base. Mans is not in for it. But he has to, because unless they resolve everything that is happening, like getting rid of the robot, figuring out what to do with Static, who's a wanted criminal now, who's also in his home, he really can't get away from it. So, bit of a forced obligation to interact. Oliver's there to be Oliver, to be Vault. He's got a robot that he's got to take care of and some superheroes that he was basically told to watch over by Superman, so he's doing that.
Yeah.
Anybody else missing? Oh, Chip is just... Pinocchio.
Correct.
He's just walking around going, wow, what's that? Wow, what's that? Wow, what's that? And then somebody pulls out a gun, and he turns into Atlas. He goes from Chip to Atlas, which is like this whole like morphing process, like an exosuit thing. And then he fucking shoots people.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chip's a fun character to try and write story points for, because truly, I could throw anything at him, and he'd be like, wow. You know? His whole arc is becoming a real boy, believe it or not.
It's Pinocchio.
Yeah, 100% Pinocchio. But it's fun. He's a very adorable character.
Yeah.
So Rexford is Bruce Wayne without the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
He is a hot dumb, loaded. And that's pretty much it. That's like his whole character shtick.
There's nothing else there.
Fun fact, on a Nat 1... we find out / discover / write into existence that Nightlight has a massive crush on potentially one of the dumbest people to exist in this city. Because he's hot.
I tried to do a lore check, and it was a nat one, and,
you know everything there is to know about him, including who he's dated in the past,
mm-hmm.
what his line of fragrances is like, what vehicles he drives.
How many magazines he's appeared in.
Yeah.
What age number on those magazines that he was in.
You know why? Because he's your celebrity crush.
So that was a... So her individual investigation went off track so fast.
Which is funny, because she's like the only person in the party that has any like real pluses to investigation.
She very quickly...
Straight out the window.
Very quickly learned she's just like the detective super... She's she's Batman detective. And that level of, like, preparedness and, like, investigation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But just immediately, none of that mattered.
Yep. So the lead with Rexford is that he has a lot of money, and with that money, he likes to collect basically odds and ends in the form of magical items, in the form of dangerous items, because this is a world and those exist. He showcases them, he hosts really big galas, and basically just buys a bunch of really dangerous shit and puts it in his home, because that's... He can do that. One of them goes missing. He puts out basically a bounty, if you will. Anybody, any team is welcome to come to his home, investigate the scene. If they can find the staff, great. Here's a fat stack of credits. If you can't, sucks to suck. I don't really care. I don't have time to deal with this. And of course, that's when Commissioner Slane gets a hold of that lead and goes, hey, maybe you can do this because you're not half bad. They show up. They do a lot of investigating. They realize that his personal assistant might be multiple personal assistants. Also, he's a total tool. And there's a piece of the staff that's gone missing called the Gravitas, which is basically a staff that's sort of like rumored because people don't really like turn them on to have like gravity powers. Shocker, much later, they find out it does exactly that. So they be detectives, they find things out, they get a bunch of information. Nightlight, Shadow, and Rexford almost have a threesome. It's bad.
Nightlight gets her entire tuition covered by Shadow sleep with Rexford.
Rexford goes, hey man, if you want to sleep with me, you can go down to my garage and take any car you want. And Shadow goes, what if I paid for your tuition? And then knocks him out.
It was reverse prostitution in that she was actively being paid to not sleep with someone, but she got her tuition covered.
Yeah. That was so fun.
It was such an interaction.
It was a really fun investigation, all things funny. Considered. They hop in their car. They go back. I gave them a bone because I felt bad because none of them passed one check on the way in and on the way out. The person that took all their weapons in the beginning, like the door man, was the red stripe chick.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking with them, basically. Also, who would have thought that maybe the secretary person is also a red stripe lady? It's almost like she's going to be the main villain for a while or something. Not to beat it over the head or anything.
So
they go back. I got this.
I was talking about the base because we added that in.
When did that happen?
Right,
did that happen
now,
after?
It was in the timeline alteration thing right now, which is what I was going to say.
I didn't think that the base thing happened until after Prodigal did her... Oh, I said her name. Until Red Stripe Lady did her thing first.
Are we doing the alternate timeline? Or
no, the first one.
The first one? Okay, then, yeah.
Yeah, because the first... So, in the first one... See, this is where it gets confusing, because this is where a lot of the changes happen. Because a lot of things happened that I wasn't a fan of and nobody else was, so we retconned a lot. They go back from Rexford's. They show up to the garage, their impromptu base. All the lights are out. Aunt Susie and Chloe, Sebastian's younger Annie-powered sister, they're gone. There's a comic book. It's all bad.
Nightlight goes on the roof to read the comic book.
Finds one of the comic books. It says duck on the last page. Shocker, she doesn't duck fast enough and gets shot hard as fuck.
Like, fully sniped.
Yeah, like, sniped from, the top of a skyscraper kind of deal.
It is on death-saving throws.
Yep, at, the beginning of combat. she fires, or somebody fires another bullet at Sebastian, going for the two youngest party members, and he catches that shit with a wrench.
Yeah.
He catches the bullet with a wrench, and that's when we learn that these bullets are not just bullets. These bullets have neurotoxin in them. Like, a whole half of the bullet just got a fun poison cocktail.
Just trying to fucking knock people the fuck out.
Yep.
Make it so they cannot get back up. Presumably for kidnapping.
Presumably for kidnapping. So then at the same time, DRT shows up. And then everybody, it's a mix of fighting DRT things. It's a mix of Shadow Ghost. You did not just shoot the two youngest people in the party. I actually love them like children now. And then proceeds to full sprint up the side of a skyscraper to essentially rush the person with the sniper rifle, assuming it is Red Stripe Lady.
Not
by the way,
he
spends
hands.
The whole combat doing this. Like, the entire combat encounter is finished by the time that he gets up there and has his 1v1 with this person.
Yeah.
If that tells you how dedicated he was to this goal.
The garage gets destroyed.
Oh, yeah. Most
clear.
Of the walls in the garage get destroyed.
Bunch
of DRT people are knocked out. Yeah, a car gets driven into the house at one point, or in the garage. It's bananas. Nobody dies. One of the things, and the only thing actually that Inferno gave Sebastian when he saw him was a pen. Game of pen. And a box with a costume in it that he doesn't open for many, many sessions. But anyways, he has a pen, and it's very much like a Percy Jackson pen. He says Inferno in the middle of a combat encounter, and it turns into a giant fire lance, because what else does the man that does fire things give his son? And then he stabs somebody and burns them alive because he's angry. And we have never addressed that in the campaign since it happened. I mean, we literally have not addressed that since it happened. He is 18 years old. He burned a man alive. It has only been mentioned in a throwaway line by his father, who basically said, next time, sweep up the ashes so that I don't have to do that for you. You're not that great at what, like, you're not that great at your job. That crazy thing that happens, nothing comes of it. Really, the only thing significant that happens in this combat is that Shadow runs the 1v1s with Red Stripe Lady, gets his ass kicked immediately. A fun fact, he has a huge weakness to light, which is funny because there's a light-based character in the campaign, which means she effectively can't really heal him. Anyways, he gets up there and gets hit with like six different spotlights all at the same time, and then proceeds to get manhandled. But not before he invades her mind and realizes that she's so crazy that she has created a mental construct of every party member, including Chip. And that helps her basically plan for what they're going to do, because she's bad shit. So what does he do? He rips out his personality in her mind. Because that's how metal he is.
And then he also gets, like, shot point blank in the
chest. Oh, yeah. And then he gets shot several times. They end up tumbling off the side. At this point, I'm thinking, cool, he's going to let her fall off the edge and that's going to be it.
No.
He jumps off of the skyscraper after her in a nosedive to catch her. She turns around 360 midair, spins at the waist, levels the sniper rifle at his chest and goes, haha, joke's on you, and pulls the trigger. And then they end up back in the fucking building. She says some really sexual things to him and is like, hey, dog, you're kind of cool. I fuck with everything you got going on right now, but we'll talk later. And then skedaddles.
He goes, I'm going to kill you like the dog you are.
Yep. Yep. He's put in a coma because he took a bullet to the chest.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it from there.
Yeah, crew drives up. Nightlight puts him in the car and is like, hey, dog, what's up? And he's like, I'm fine. And she's like, I can't heal you. We've, like, well, we kind of half established that, but she cannot heal him. They go back. They find, at this point, everything's bad. They take static.
Yeah, we never.
Static
never.
We
really
forgot he existed.
So in the first timeline, Static is also kidnapped along with Susie and
Oh,
Chloe.
Right. So that's where he is. Never mind.
He's off and wherever.
So we're like, we need a new base because this one just got blown the fuck up. So Chip's like, I found an old hideout that Codfather used to use. They go there. It's like underwater. It's super sick, but I'm not going to.
Mad swanky.
You'll probably hear more about it in the one shot that we do.
Yep. Super swank.
And they go to the base. They start setting up the base. And this is when, this is literally how fast things went
oh
to
Oh, yeah,
shit.
It was literally this session. So,
there's no cell service down there.
To do a little bit of backstory before we get to this moment, because it's a little bit important. Oliver has been basically harassed by his boss this whole time, because at this point I had been playing his boss, Henry, like a mega asshole. It's like texting all the time, where are you? You can't just disappear. You have a really important job. I've since relaxed that. Because that's just a lot for him as a person to handle. And a lot for me as a person to handle. I'm not going to put that fully on him. And is like, hey, you can't just disappear. And he goes, I haven't disappeared. I'm actually tailing the people that have the robot. And he's, at this point, blowing off his boss multiple times, who is the director of DRT. Like, he is the director of the FBI. He is going to disappear you if you do not appear yourself.
Mm-hmm.
At work with evidence that his probably several hundred thousand credit venture into raiding the hospital, which failed, came of something.
Yeah.
And it's like, cool, if you're really on the trail of somebody, give me proof. Because at this point, I'm calling bullshit.
And it's at this moment that they realize that the base that they're in doesn't have cell service, and Nightlight,
because none of it's turned on,
needs to text her very best friend in the world, Parker, and make sure that he's okay. So she goes, all right, I'm going to take the pretty long trek back up, above base.
It's like a 3.5 minute elevator ride.
Yeah. And everyone's like, hey, you have a stalker that just jumped the fuck out of us and shot you immediately. We don't want to leave you unsupervised. So Volt goes, I'll go with her. I'll chaperone. She's like, okay. Which in a fucked up way is immediately what he did when he got back to the original timeline.
100%.
So she's like, grown woman, don't need a chaperone, but whatever. So she's up there. She's trying to text and call her best friend, literally just minding her own business, just trying to text her bestie. And he goes, hey, superhero pose. And she's never going to pass up an opportunity for a superhero pose because she's been all about selfies and like hanging out in group team things at this point. And so she poses, and he takes that picture, and he sends it to his boss, Henry, and goes, she's behind it all.
Yeah. He takes it a step further than that and goes, not only is she behind it all, she's also working with, like, the biggest terrorist organization in the city, the Spy Circle.
All unprompted.
Yeah, he gets, while he's up there, he's also checking his phone because, again, he has a full-time, very important job, and that's when he gets the text that says, hey, man, I need proof, or you're fired. You're beyond fired. He goes, okay, and then says, hero pose, takes a picture, sends it to Henry, and then that's when things go fully off the fucking rails.
Yeah.
Henry goes, sick. I'm gonna put out a warrant for her arrest. We're gonna find out who she is, where she lives. And we'll go from there. Great job, keep up the good work.
She goes back to her apartment that night and invites Sebastian to come with her and stay the night because his house just got blown up. And that evening, she gets a knock on the door, and it is it Commissioner?
Commissioner
Slane. And she goes, open the door. And she goes, not without a warrant. And she goes, open the door, nightlight. And she goes, huh? and she goes, yeah, things are bad. You need to get the fuck out of town. Daisy needs to die. And she went, what?
You gotta disappear, Daisy dog.
And she was like, you have to be gone for until you gotta figure out how to solve this problem and figure out why suddenly DRT, you are their number one most wanted, and you are linked with the Splice Circle, and you're linked with Static's disappearance, and you're linked with the Atlas bot, and all of these other like crazy things that have happened. And she's like, okay, I guess my life's over now. So she packs up. It's like, Sebastian, we gotta go. I don't have a home either now. So she moves into the base with Sebastian. Yeah, if you wanna.
Oh, Jesus.
This is where things started to get like muddy with the chaos of what was happening. None of us were like really into what we were doing.
I'd like to remind you of a couple of important events that have happened at this point. Number one, Sebastian's family has been kidnapped, presumably by a Red Stripe Lady. Number two, Static has also presumably been kidnapped by a Red Stripe Lady.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, they have a case that they've accepted, have a lead on, have essentially opened and put their name and ring in the hat for that one. That's also out there. Really, those three main things from here on out until we reset the timeline do not get addressed, do not get tackled, get zero interaction, because Nightlight's character now has to go into full hiding mode, completely does an identity reset, and I'll let you talk about that. Oh my god, I'm trying to think of even where things go from there. So he takes the picture, and then from there, it's cool. Nightlight's a fugitive, we're switching identities. Beyond that, Shadow goes sick. So we're just fucking DRT fully now. I've been doing that, but now we're doing that. Oh my god, what even happens?
I'm telling you, things got messy. So
I don't even remember what happens post.
Volt goes to work. He doubles down.
Oh shit! Yeah, Volt goes to work and doubles down
and accuses her of more crimes.
Oh yeah. So Henry goes, cool. So you're still tracking this Nightlight person, right? Like, can you provide me with like any actual information on her other than you think she's related? And he goes, I mean, she's done like everything. She's the mastermind.
She is the big bad. She's the BBEG for all intents and purposes.
Henry goes, that's so cool, man. You still have a robotics program to finish. What if we did that? What if we worked on that for a little bit? And Volt goes, okay. So Henry takes him down to the lab and goes, cool, if you can turn on one of these things for me, I will extend your deadline of basically reclaiming Chip by a handful of time, week, month, whatever.
He's like, we need these bots to kill this Nightlight bitch at this point.
Yeah, so
he's that powerful, apparently.
Turns on one, and Henry's like, cool, deadline extended. And then if you want to talk about Nightlight's identity thing that happens in the middle of all this.
So at this point, Nightlight's identity is compromised as Daisy. It's like kind of public,
and just
but
as
not
Nightlight.
Like, yeah, as Nightlight. It's kind of public, but not like super public that Nightlight and Daisy are the same person. It's kind of like if you look on two news channels, you can find it. But like, it's not the top build story. Nightlight being a criminal is definitely very public information. So she's like, cool, I guess I have to give up on that. So she dons the identity of Blackout, where she basically, it's very similar to like the Spider-Man suit that he wears in the second one, the black one, and the Tom Holland ones. She's no longer using her powers. Instead, she's using guns. She goes to a black market shop and to get some more guns, because she's like, I can't use my powers because they're going to realize it's me. She meets this guy. the deal is going bad, It's just, it's bad. She.
Well, the guy goes, so what do you want a gun for? And she's like, well, can I buy a gun? And he goes, yeah, what for, though? Because, like, you are so very clearly out of your depth. And that basically happens until eventually he pulls out a shotgun and goes, cool, you're going to buy the gun and the ammo for full price, and then you're going to leave. And yeah. Then it just continues to go off the rails from
it
there.
It just gets bad and worse, and then someone comes up from behind and just clocks him in the fucking head. And she ends up fighting with him, like, alongside the guy who punched him. His name is Morph. He is a Annie-powered shapeshifter. They become buddies. It's a nice little, like, one kind of happy thing that happened. In the midst of all of this fuckery. And she also gets a cat named Wink, that Morph,
cat named Wink.
Was Morph's cat that attaches itself to her. It's a hawk
cat. Shapeshifters.
It's a cat that, like, has hawk wings.
Yeah, and talons, and can do fun things.
So she gets news that there's now some fuck shit happening in, outside of DRT headquarters, as, one of these bots has...
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. So everything's happening
this
with
is,
that.
As you could tell, just on our body language alone, this is where it started to get to a point where it was like, we weren't happy with what we were doing, but we were trucking on.
Yeah. The plot with all the other characters also at this point gets lost. Chip is making friends with a local bodega man and learning how to be a real boy, and that's basically his only mission at this point. Shadow is tries to start a clinic in the Eastern Fringes and very quickly takes that back because it is too stressful trying to run an entire mini hospital on his own after he was fired from his last doctor job because he just stopped coming in, you know, because he was there and then all of a sudden wasn't because that was the hospital they broke Static out of. They're all going through the fucking trenches. Shadow's like, cool, I'm trying to find people. I have no idea where to look. Kaze is just like, my life fucking sucks. I'm so depressed. This is awful.
Yeah.
It's all fucking bad. My neighborhood is trashed. My family's been kidnapped. My home has been destroyed. My friends are nuts. I don't want anything to do with it. Nightlight's going through an identity crisis.
Sebastian gets to make friends with Parker, who's been running some, like, working at some soup kitchens and volunteers for Annie people in the fringes.
Yep.
And in a very sad way, like, Nightlight, dressed up as Blackout, basically sets up, like, a little camp across the street from where Parker normally volunteers to keep an eye on him and make sure that he's okay.
Yep. So things are going well. Yeah. Things are starting to get back on track at this point. And I say starting in a very loose way. I have plans to resolve the identity crisis that's happening with Nightlight. I know what's going on with Kaze. I'm starting to make them circle back around to rescuing his fucking family that's been gone for a month at this point. Shadow is figuring out his personal life. And then Volt, who is at the heart of all of these problems, goes back to Henry again. And Henry's like, cool, how do we turn them all on? Somebody turned one of them on, and they are literally a fucking goon. If a goon can do it, you can do it. Volt has been purposely sabotaging these bots up to this point, by the way, so that they would never be able to get turned on. So he cracks, seeing zero way out of the situation, and goes, fine, I'll show you how to turn them on for like an hour. Right after this happens, Henry goes, cool, so I've had you tailed. And I've had your phone bugged since you made basically the first screenshot, phone call, whatever the fuck about Nightlight, since you've been coming and going from your little base in the fringes. I know who you are. I know your superhero identity. I like you enough as a person, and I appreciate the work that you do enough as an employee that if you just agree to hang up the cape right now, I'll let you just keep living your life. Just stop being a fucking superhero. Just stop it. Just stop it. So he goes, nah. Nah, actually, I think I'm gonna fight my way out. There is a fully functional Atlas bot. Chip, by the way, has done, and the person that plays him has been an absolutely wonderful example of what one of these bots is capable of. Like, he is a everyman, maximum health, maximum hit points, spell for everything kind of character because he's a bot that has nanotechnology. I mean, he's like the front of technology in this world.
Notes from this session, it was so
bad. and he turns one of them on. So keep in mind, there's one of these bots, one of these Atlas bots, that is designed to handle any deviation it encounters that has just been turned on less than 10 feet away from him. Henry goes, I'll give you one chance. He's in a room full of guards. We've also established up to this point that people use guns, and guns fucking suck. Like, yeah. They do a lot of damage, and they hit you multiple times.
They're guns.
They're guns. That's the idea. So what does Volt do? Volt goes, yeah, I'll fight my way out. So Henry then
demonstrates... Oh, by the way, we never mentioned the fact. Shadow gets infected with a parasite.
Oh, yeah.
He has venom. He's now Batman, but he has
Remember
venom.
When he got shot in the chest? So the neurotoxin basically mixes with his nervous system, and his shadow powers essentially circulate it through his body to keep him alive and to put him back, like Iron Man style, basically, like with the magnet, to keep him alive. Well, he just took an extended trip inside Red Stripe Lady's mind, who's now Prodigal, and Prodigal's mind...
is fucked.
Is fucked. So this neurotoxin that's basically designed to debilitate people, and having taken a fun extended stay in Prodigal's mind while also basically missing 3/4 of his heart, makes for a really nasty mix. And the shadows basically form an entire personality of their own to keep him alive that is basically like Venom, and is like, cool, kill people. Kill people now.
That's also happening. So go back
Murder
to where
them,
we were.
Kill them. And he's but like, I have so many new powers now. Also, I can't go out in the sunlight because
also,
now I'm incredibly weak to anything that has light.
Yeah.
So that's all happening with him at the same time, and I have no idea what to do with that. So we go back to fucking Volt. He's like, cool, I'm going to fight my way out. Henry
so
goes,
mad.
That's so disappointing. I can't let you leave. You know too much. Henry then demonstrates that he has some kind of powers before he even gets a chance to use them. All fucking 10 guards in the room turn their guns on and fire. Volt goes basically last on initiative order if we're talking about combat mechanics. The bot one-taps him. He comes back to life using one of our fun little mechanics where you can spend these things called stamina die to basically, like, hero surge yourself back to life. I let him come back from death saving throws 3 fucking times. 3 times in a combat. Twice is the maximum number you're allowed before you permadie, by the way. I was nice enough at this point to go, cool, well, you made a decision. Certainly you didn't know how bad it was going to be. Let's get you out of the building. He gets out of the building. This bot is fully locked onto him because their only prerogative is to detain deviants that have shown hostility. He's going around tasing people, trying to survive, right? So it's like, cool, picking you up, dog. I'm cuffs the whole 9 yards. I'm doing what I do to put you down. They make it to the front steps of DRT. They're at this point in broad fucking daylight. And he is fighting for his life absolutely fruitlessly. He's about to get curb stomped into the ground by Atlas 2.0, because at this point we're calling Chip Atlas 1.0. And then Surge, who he speaks to literally half an hour before he goes into this meeting, he name drops that he knows that Surge's girlfriend is his best friend, whose name is Jenny. That's also a thing that happens. It's only relevant because it's the only thing that saves his life. In this conversation with Surge, she basically stops in midair and goes, hey, dog, I gave you 2 jobs and you have done 0 of them. And you know what he says? He says, oh, that sucks. Also, tell your girlfriend I said hi. Huh? You said what to who? He told Superman he knew Lois Lane and to tell her he said hi after he had already basically told her that he had done none of what he was supposed to do. And then turns on the deviant murder bots immediately after. So he's about to die on the front steps. Surge, literally only because she knows that he is a friend of her girlfriend's, shows up and saves his life. And goes, I want you to understand that it's for no other reason you have a connection to me, and it's going to look real bad if I let you die on these front steps right now. I'm going to save your life. Basically picks him up, sets him down.
I don't want to be in the doghouse with my girlfriend right now, and that is the only reason I'm saving your bitch ass.
And then proceeds to 1v1 the fucking Atlas bot in public. For reference, when I was designing mechanics and combat steps in stat blocks, I was like, how do I make this character beyond busted?
I have written down how much damage she did in that fight.
She's like level 25 for reference. She is, if I had to put a CR on her, she would be up there with a Tarrasque, if not higher. She is supposed to be untouchable. These bots are designed to adapt to any deviation, almost certainly with people like Surge and Inferno in mind. She almost fucking dies. One of these things, there are 10 of them, by the way, in stock that Henry now has basically the keys to. We've also found out previous to this that somebody has a manual override button installed in every one of these bots. So even if Henry's mind and heart are in the right place, it doesn't matter because apparently if somebody wants to turn them on sicko mode, all they have to do is flip a switch.
Yeah.
So one of these things almost KOs the most powerful hero in the city in front of everybody in public. That's how that combat counter ends. The Millennium Group shows up and is basically doing damage control. Rebellion walks off with Surge. A very fun moment happens where Black Magic and Rebellion basically corner Volt, put him in a bubble where nobody can see or talk to him. And Rebellion goes, I want you to know that I would literally put you in the ground right now if we were in anywhere other than public. You are a garbage person. You're a shit hero. Why are you even doing this job? And then proceeds to slap him across the face. And Volt, in that moment, is like, yeah, fuck you, I don't really care. Insane! Literally insane. You just almost caused Superman to die. And just the arrogance in the face of everything was just nuts. I mean, that's the character. That's not even the player. I mean, we talked about that during character creation. We just let him reach a point where he had too many options to be that person.
Correct.
I did not humble him enough up until this point. I waited way too late, and by then, we were all in a state of mania. It didn't matter.
The mania at this table was insane. Because, like, I've written down what happens next. This is when things get... If you think things cannot get more fuck shit,
so
things get more fuck shit.
Superman, Surge, right, is on death's door. The medical analysis that everyone is able to perform at the scene is that she may never be able to physically recover from the fight. I designed a mechanic for her that allows her to basically burn the equivalent of several ninth-level spells on a single turn. She does that, barely edges out the win, and that ability was only meant to be used if she was going to die. She reaches that point, uses that ability, basically fucks herself, is bleeding profusely from the face and from the nose, and everyone's like, yeah, dog, I don't know if she's getting back up. Like, I don't know if a little healing coma tube thing is going to do it. I think she might just be fucked. All of that happens. Everyone goes back to HQ. Now it's a conversation of what do we do about the bots? Volt is feeling very bad. Volt is feeling remorseful. He's thinking, well, I've just fucked Nightlight's entire
Volt
identity.
Goes to his apartment and Prodigal beats the shit out of him and goes, hey, why'd you snitch, motherfucker?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
See, there are things that I forget.
Why did you dox Nightlight? And he went, I don't know. And she went, you've got to play by the rules. Bitch slaps him and leaves him a comic book. And it once again follows the traditional. There were another couple comic books that Nightlight got that I didn't mention. And it, like, follows Nightlight up until the point where Volt decides to do the superhero pose thing. And then it takes over and switches to Volt's perspective and follows his life.
Volt's become the new hyperfixation.
Yeah.
This is King fuck up.
And another copy of this exact comic was left on
When we say
Shadows.
Follows Volt's perspective, this is a panel by a panel of every decision Volt has made literally since he went up and took a picture of Nightlight, which means his crime, which is doxing one of their team members and then turning on the bots, is documented in a pretty faithful series of fucked up comic books. Like, Prodigal's crazy, don't get me wrong. She's been fairly faithful in her adaptions of the comic books because she's a fucking psycho. So there's no reason not to believe that. Shadow, by the way, who's our Batman, does not know how to be Batman at this point and has not made the decision to be Batman, so he is a fucking blabbermouth.
And Nightlight is fucking homegirl, and he's like immediately
several
like, I'm gonna
times
tell her everything.
Announces to several people that Jury, the NPC that wasn't that important, that was just there in the beginning to, you know, be a guy and help move the story along. They're fucking brothers.
Mentions that several times.
They're sons of the mayor.
We're like, you gotta stop saying that.
He just keeps telling people things about himself.
So he gets a copy of this comic as well. They all go meet at the base. Nightlight tells everyone about the identity leak thing, blah, blah, blah. Shadow hands her the comic and tells her to read it.
He goes, I'm not keeping secrets from anybody. He doesn't read it before he hands it to her, by the way.
He, on instinct, went, She was like, this has your name on it. And he was like, you.
Yep.
So she reads it. She sees that.
In this moment at the table, I looked him dead in his face and I said, you're not even going to read it? He goes, well, I'd give it to her anyways. I said, why don't you read it first? So he reads it. And then he goes, yeah, I'm still going to give it to her.
And so she reads the page and she sees that Volts is the one that rats her out. And this is a moment where me as a player is still trying to fight against, because I'm playing just a fucking good character. Like, one thing about Nightlight is that she's just good to the fucking core and she forgives everyone and she believes there's good in everyone. And it's very infuriating for me as a player to play a character that good sometimes, because I'm like, this is bullshit. I want to be mad at people. But it doesn't make sense for Nightlight, the fucking ray of goddamn sunshine that she is, to to hold grudges.
Yeah.
That has changed in the reset timeline.
Better than me, dog. Better than me.
So she rips out the page and just puts it in her pocket and doesn't say anything. And at some point, Volt realizes that she knows, but she's just choosing not to say anything. Things are bad. They go back to the base. I have written down that, like, there was a moment where Volt goes up to her, breaks his phone in half in front of her, and just drops it at her feet. Doesn't say a fucking word. There is no dialogue. Walks away. And then Chip goes up and goes, do you like your room? I'm sorry you're homeless. Do you like your room? And it's just this. It was bad. It was awkward. We're finally starting to get things on track. There's a moment where, like, Nightlight finally gets through and texts Shuri and goes and meets him as Blackout. They have, like, a full scream fight in a park, just in public, where he's like, I told you not to fucking hang out with those people. And she was like, I made a mistake.
He goes, I literally told you to hang out with anybody else. And then when she's like, cool, dog, can you help me? He goes, no. Yeah. No, you're on your own. I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole. That's you fucked your reputation. I'm not fucking mine, too.
Yeah, so that was the last we saw of him in this timeline.
Yeah, he fucking skedaddled, dog.
It was literally, which is...
No, we see him again later.
Well, yeah, but at, like, the very end.
We see him again later.
I was throwing a bone for you. I was putting that interaction out there. So they're back at the base. They go on, like, a cute little patrol as a group, and it's finally the first nice thing. They run into Codfather again. Nightlight beams out of him. Everyone's like, hey, dog, what's up? You could have done that the whole time. And she was
Godfather
like...
Godfather cannot catch a fucking break, by the way. He is, at this point, he doesn't have a home. He doesn't have goons. He doesn't have minions. There's no business he's running. He's now taken to essentially fucked up vigilantism and is eating people that are terrorizing the anti-powered people that are now homeless because his operation is no longer a business.
Yeah, so they find him.
So they stop him from doing that.
There's a little fight because he was trying to eat a lady and
should have let him do it.
Things are finally starting to like chill a little bit. And Volt goes, you know, I felt really bad earlier about leaking Nightlight's identity.
We're at this point now. That's exciting.
I think I know what can fix this. By the way, there's at some point in this, when there's the whole thing that happens, Nightlight ends up talking to Processor, who's like the robot lady, and is like, are you able to like hack into any security camera and like prove basically that I haven't committed these crimes? And she goes, yeah, I got you, and hands her a USB. It does not have any of the information she asked for on it. It's just a photo of like Serge and the mayor and Henry from DRT having dinner together. And she's like, that's not what I asked for, but okay, I'm sure this is important. So at this point, Nightlight has all the evidence that Volt was the one that, like, that none of these claims are true and that Volt made them all up, but she's refusing to put that out there because she's like, I'm not going to drag his name down in the dirt, even though he did do this really fucked up thing. I'm a good person. And Volt goes, I'm just going to go on live television and hack into, I'm going to have Chip hack into every single camera, like, screen.
Yeah.
In the city.
He pulls a Riddler.
This message, and he goes, hey, Nightlight's fully innocent. I lied and committed and like accused her of all these things. Also, accuses DRT of having kidnapped Sebastian's family.
Yeah. I asked him when he was doing this, I said, hey, so I get confessing on live television that, like, oh, it wasn't Nightlight. It was like, it was me, or like, it wasn't really Nightlight, or I was just trying to do whatever. I said, how much do you tell them? Because you also have all this information now about DRT, and if you're going on live television doing this to yourself, and you've already lost your job with DRT, and I shouldn't have even mentioned this because I think I'm the one that gave them the idea. How much of their dirty laundry would you like to air now that you have everyone's screen?
He says all of it.
So what do you mean all of it?
All of it.
Like you tell them about the bots and the family, and he go, yeah, every bit. Fun fact, just to give you a little bit of insider knowledge here, DRT did not kidnap Sebastian's family. That's Prodigal. Prodigal did that shit to fuck with them, and they were never able to investigate that to figure out if that was the case. So
he had bigger fish to fry.
That was unequivocally fucking false. So he accuses DRT, the standing military / FBI, of kidnapping civilians and of designing and turning on bots that will kill people. A lot of people. So what does DRT do? I roll for this.
They shut down power in the city.
DRT goes martial law. They said, okay, we are going to turn off everything. I think your character, right, also jumps in on this and is like, hey, here's also shit to back this up.
I asked the players at the table, I said, okay, guys, I'm about to throw up right now. We are going balls to the wall, correct? And everyone went, yeah. And that's about how we sounded. And I said, cool. She tweets out, which she's had a strong social media presence this whole time. That's a big part of her character. She tweets out the pictures the processor sent her. She gets fucking wiped from the internet. There is no trace that Nightlight or Blackout have ever existed. Nightlight, Blackout, or Daisy Dent have ever fucking existed. Completely
gone. Yeah, she
gone. Puts
out all of the information that processor gives her, which is basically a bunch of shit that nobody should have had. And yeah, DRT hops on that shit immediately, takes down all of her social media, removes any presence she has ever had from the internet, and basically blacklists her from all of the social media sites. This is at the point where I'm like, cool, DRT just continues to take L after L. What do we do? I roll for it. It's martial law.
Yeah.
They shut off power to the city. They remove Wi-Fi access. They basically institute a curfew. They say, this is going to last until we find the people that are responsible for this, because this is terrorism. This is just straight up terrorism. This is an attack on the city government. Terrorism. Terrorism, terrorism, more terrorism. If you are caught aiding and abetting said terrorist, you're also a terrorist. And then turns on all the bots.
Yeah. And then the party splits up, and they do not see each other for several years.
And so we took a hiatus and went on a fun field trip to Florida for fall winter break.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to literally everybody that entire time and said, what the fuck do I do?
And then we talked about
the time.
It's
gonna have to be a two-parter.
I was about to say we talked about the time skip and the other if we want to gloss over.
Yeah, I'll hit top points. So I decide that what I'm gonna go with. Well, if you haven't listened to it, I won't spoil it entirely. I'll do the natural progression. I follow this through.
This.
I follow this through. I said, cool. What happens to this world? Not good. Not great.
DRT
continues to put out more bots.
Sucked.
Continues to put out more and more bots. They kill a lot of people. They get back Atlas 1.0/Chip. Chip dearms Nightlight in a conflict, which was a moment that literally had several players in tears.
We cried about it again the other day when we were downstairs talking about it.
Yeah, like that is a moment that deeply affected everybody. Well, here's my reasoning. That was a deeply traumatic session for all of us, me included. I'm a huge consequences to your action DM, because I think that is one of the more fun ways to have a world and to make it more realistic, which is everything you do has a equal and opposite reaction. I decided that the only real way to teach my players a lesson was to go full consequences to your actions. This is the world that you all left it in. This is the world that we're going to finish in before we reset. I open the session with none of your characters are expected to live. I want you all to understand that what's going to happen for the rest of the session is not going to be fun for anybody, including myself, but this is where we're at now.
It was one of the most fun games I've ever played.
It was fucking phenomenal. I don't think I can ever top it.
Yeah.
It's high notes. They get a bomb. Volt comes back, teams up with Prodigal. Nightlight leads all the superheroes. Nightlight dies, whatever.
She fully fakes her death.
Surge is in a wheelchair, more or less in a coma forever, trying to recover her strength. DRT takes over the entire city. It's villains and heroes teaming up together. It's ran, cats and dogs, the whole nine yards.
So much.
They make a final plan with all of the remaining members of the superheroes and supervillains to basically push DRT one last time, take out the control center for all the bots. everybody lives. I mean, a lot of the, pretty much all the NPCs die, but all of our player characters actually make it to the very end. They get the bomb up to the top. They get Chip back. That was really sad and fun and awful and great
that
to watch.
That was the wildest fight.
Yeah. Nightlight and Chip have a 1v1, and that shit was fucking nuts. Absolutely insane. We had somebody role lawyering on the side, and that is truly the only reason that the combat encounter did not go more poorly. Long story short, super long, depressing session short. The bomb goes off at the top of DRT's tower. One of our player characters dies. Volt, who made all of the wonderful, shitty decisions.
Did Chip live? Because yeah. Chip chose to stay
Chip
in
out.
The building and watch it explode.
Yeah, Chip lives.
Okay.
Chip hopped into the ethereal plane, basically, and then watched, and then phased back in and flew away.
In a wild decision.
Yeah, Chip goes, I actually want to watch Henry burn. Pops into the ethereal and watches Henry burn. And that's how that timeline ends. Volt goes to Volt Heaven, where all of the people that have had his power before him, because his character, sort of like his class, is inherited, so he's like a Thor type. He basically goes and meets all the other like lightning / electricity wielders that have had his power before him, and they go, hey, we thought that was it, and you were just going to suck forever, but you did maybe kind of a cool thing here. So we're going to give you one chance. One chance. We're going to drop you back, way back, right before you made the worst mistake of your life, and we're going to give you a second chance.
And we pop back in right before he goes, superhero pose.
So that's where we're going to end today's session, because it is 1 a.m.
Yeah,
we'll have work in about 7 hours.
We finished part 2 as a bonus episode.
Yeah, bonus episode something. So what's going to happen over the next couple episodes is we'll do some character creation where myself and Madison will make 2 more characters to play in this universe, and then episode 10 will be another sort of every 5 episode one-shot where we'll do the first half of a long-ish one-shot, kind of like we did with the first one in Kids on Bikes, inside Sapphire City. Where I will not probably, hopefully, if I can manage it, mention a single fucking character from the original campaign, because I would love to not.
Fair enough.
They exist, don't get me wrong, but we're not interacting with any of them. So, yeah, we'll either do a bonus episode or I don't know, put out a part 2 at some point. But that is the original first half, essentially, of the campaign.
Yeah.
It starts fun and cool and superhero, and then it just fucking...
So bad, so fast.
Literally. That's how it ends.
Our base is also built on a bomb. That's just a side note.
The person who plays Chip got really into Minecraft and learned how to do chemistry and physics through Minecraft. And I let him make a couple of tech checks, which are the new religion check in this universe, and he built a hydrogen bomb. Well, hydrogen reactor, but, you know, you can turn anything that makes electricity or generates power into a bomb. So that's what everyone calls it now, the hydrogen bomb. That's actually what, that's their plan B in the alternative timeline, is to set off the bomb in the base and take out as many bots with them as humanly possible. Which doesn't happen, because they actually all live.
In a
except
crazy
for all of the other NPCs.
Like, it wasn't a happy ending, to be clear. Shadow turned into a literal monster.
Demon. I mean,
it
was
is
a fucking
eating people.
Demon.
At the end of this, like in this world that presumably goes on, he had to be put down by his teammates in a really fucked up way of like, we've got to kill the dog because the dog has rabies.
He goes full terrorist in between the end of the one session and the beginning of the Flashpoint session. Like, full terrorist. He is executing DRT members on live television. He is consuming them, like, their energy, not, like, their physical body. He basically turns himself into an energy vampire and goes full fucking, oh, my God, what's that one movie? V for Vendetta?
Yeah.
Like, full that, but way worse.
Yeah.
Way worse. Shows up to the full team meeting, and everyone pulls out a gun and is like, hey, we're bad guys, don't get me wrong.
You eat, motherfuckers.
But we're not... Like, there are members of the Splice Circle who run prostitution rings. They pull out guns and go, hey, you're a bad guy. I don't really know if I want you here.
Meanwhile, you look at the other extremes on the team, and Nightlight has become the hero.
Yeah.
Shadow is the terrorist. Sebastian... He's not like
no. He
he's Sebastian
goes fully in the opposite direction.
He's a guy.
He drops the hero thing fully, and he's just like, I'm gonna be a person that helps my neighborhood.
Yeah, Volt's shacking up with Prodigal. Chip is now Atlas.
Jerry's a part of the Millennial Group.
Yeah.
Inferno Turncoats. Never found out why that happened.
Yeah. It was all bad. It was truly all bad. I think Parker lived.
Every single person at the table cried over the course of that session. More than once.
Parker lived, Jerry lived. Did any other NPCs live?
Parker lived, Jerry lived. I never really decided what happened with Surge, Inferno, and Rebellion when he, or when she took off with the two.
I assumed that was three people killing each other in the sky.
Yeah, in my mind, that's the only way that that was going to end.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, they probably died.
Any other way.
No, all the villains, by the way, oh my god, the moment that got me, I've talked about this beforehand, Codfather dies in the saddest way fucking possible. And that's what got me. Everyone else had cried up to this point, and I was just trying to keep it together for the session. And then Codfather goes out, and I'm like, well, fuck, the fish died. And that's really fucked up, so I'm going to take this moment to cry as I narrate him being ripped apart by robots.
Yeah.
Nobody fucking lived with the exception of Parker and Jerry, I'm pretty sure, on the NPC list. All the villains died, all the heroes died. Except for the player characters. One of which did not want to live. Two of them didn't want to live, actually.
Yeah, and
Chip
another
and
one,
Shadow are just over
and
life.
Another one we went, I don't give a shit. Fucking kill me.
Do it.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Chaos.
So that's the first half of the Sapphire Prodigies, and to give you a little bit of insight into the world. We'll put out a part two. We'll do a let's or a actual play on a one shot in the universe where hopefully we don't do that. We don't do that at all, actually.
We don't want a flashpoint?
We don't do that, even a little.
We don't want to do that?
Nope.
I'm taking this as a challenge, Robert.
Nope. I will not let you.
I know. I have no desire to.
I would rather shoot you as an enemy.
Like, in real life?
No, like, in the game.
Oh.
Before I let you do that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to do that.
I don't know. I wouldn't put it past you just to spite me.
I mean, listen, if it's
See?
Talking about doing shit to spite
See?
You...
Anyways, that's gonna be the end of session... Eight. Season two. Jesus Christ, guys, we're getting there. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Table Talk. We will see you next Thursday.
Bye.